Welcome to Ag Matters, covering the positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit of the Alaska Farmland Trust.
Well, good morning and welcome to another edition of Ag Matters Radio, an edition that starts out very dark outside. It's definitely that time of year. I have a guest this morning. Lisa Sadler Hart will be calling in from Sitka any minute. And in anticipation of that, I want to mention a couple of things. One is that Saturday is Oxtoberfest. I think we sold out of tickets last night, so I mention it just to the listeners that I'm sorry if you didn't get a ticket yet. Mark your calendars for next year. But we're super excited for this Oxtoberfest feast and fundraiser for the Muskox Farm and Alaska Farmland Trust. I was just listening to you, Mike, mention the voting results from last night. I'm excited to see how things turn out on Friday. You know, I heard one candidate mention that if over 400 people came out and voted, she'd be happy. So that happened, right? More than 400 people came out and voted, so barely. Other exciting news with Alaska Farmland Trust will wait, because I'm guessing that's my caller, Lisa. Good morning, Lisa. Are you there?
I am.
Oh, hi. Yay. I love it when all the technology works.
Me too.
It's so nice to hear your voice, Lisa.
Well, thank you, and thanks for the invitation.
You bet. So I always like to start by asking my guests to tell me a little bit about themselves, their history with Alaska, and their background with agriculture.
Sure. So I came to Alaska after finishing graduate school in California at Berkeley in public health nutrition.
Okay.
And I came in 1989 to work at the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium as a public health and community nutritionist. So my background is in nutrition, and one of the things that became pretty apparent to me over my almost 25-year career at CERCH was how we really had it right when it came to a lot of our protein-based foods here in Alaska. And in Southeast, of course, we've got plentiful access to fish and seafood, as well as deer meat in this part of Southeast Alaska. But we were kind of lacking compared to my home state of California when it came to fruits and vegetables.
Okay.
And how much of a struggle that was to really access high-quality local food that I was used to easily accessing in the state of California.
Right.
And so as I saw food prices continue to rise and it having to get very creative about the way that I was accessing fruits and vegetables, if it was outside of the grocery stores here in town to try to reduce food costs, I read Barbara Kingsolver's book, Animal Vegetable Miracle.
Right.
And if folks haven't read that, it is a fabulous read. And started to talk to my husband about an idea of becoming micro farmers. And turning our front lawn in our neighborhood into a production garden.
Right.
And Tom was pretty interested in that, but he was also very tied to the lawn. And it took me a little while, but we finally made that transition, and we were able to access actually the board of the Sitka Local Foods Network at that time to help us do that conversion and to lay down lots and lots of stuff to weed block and then gravel. And then, you know, we designed a really beautiful garden. And, you know, I said to Tom, it not only has to be functional, it has to be beautiful, because it was going to be in the front of our home. And I also wanted it to be an invitation for people to have conversations.
Yeah.
As we're out in the garden.
So, Lisa, you live in Sitka, like in kind of city central, right there in town. So, did you face any like zoning or regulations? Were there any restrictions against you having that garden?
Yeah, that was a great question. So, not to actually put the garden in, but once we kind of got to the point where we realized that we had surplus food and really wanted to start moving it out, and I really liked the idea of having a garden stand on our property.
Okay.
That's where we ran into a zoning issue.
Okay.
So I think it was about maybe 2014, Tom and I decided to kind of dive into the planning zoning process and to make that, try to get that change made so that others could follow suit. And not, and we had some time available to kind of work on this. And it took about, from the time that we decided that we really wanted to try to do that, about an entire year.
Oh, wow.
It was not a quick process by any means because it's a public process.
Sure. Was there opposition or was it just the process is slow?
Actually, we were really fortunate because we have great relationships with all of our neighbors. And so I think they didn't see that it was going to be a major issue. But, you know, planning and zoning did, they sent letters out within a certain radius of where we would have it. They did have concerns about, of course, parking, which we had no concerns over that at all, and where we were going to place our little stand on the property, et cetera. And we were also, I think, somewhat, you know, maybe a little bit concerned just in terms of how we had laid out our garden and where our small greenhouse was and all of that. And we're right on the edge of a probably a zoning line kind of thing. But it all worked out really well, and it was a great opportunity for us to learn public process and to also to educate planning and zoning and also our assembly at the time. And at the time, I happened to be independently. I had left my work at Search and been working on Sitka's food assessment.
Right.
And so I was kind of doing that in parallel. And I think it was just a really great match, actually, to say, here, you know, look, we're trying to do something on a really micro level to improve food security for our community.
Right.
And we need to be able to make it easier
for
folks to do that, to be able to grow food and figure out ways to move that into the community. Now, in hindsight, it turned out to be a bit of a flop for us just in terms of being able to move produce. We are off the main beaten path in Sitka. And even though it's a very tiny community with not a lot of roads, people still are not kind of willing to move off the path, so to speak.
Creatures of habit, aren't we?
And to come to our garden stand. So we were doing lots of, I did some leafleting of our area. I, you know, did, of course, social media. And we still were just not getting folks to show up.
Okay.
And so, of course, having come from California and really knowledgeable about the community supported agriculture model, I was like, you know, what about if we did that instead?
Okay.
And maybe, and so that's what we migrated to last summer. And it was a boon for us. It just was amazing.
Oh, good.
And I, within like 1 hour of putting it out on our Facebook page, I had two families, and that's what we wanted to start with. We wanted to go really small to make sure that we could meet the demand. I had two families that wanted to do it.
Perfect.
It was really, really awesome. So, and it also meant that you didn't have to harvest and leave things on the stand, and then I had to figure out later if I had all this extra produce that I was going to do with it.
Right.
You know, often, you know, we do share with our neighbors and that kind of thing, but sometimes we were left with, you know, produce that I had to deal with straight up.
Right.
So, so that movement from the garden stand or farm stand to the, what I call a community supported garden box was really wonderful for us. And we call our garden box Jam and Green because I do a lot of food preservation as well. And they usually get a half pint of homemade jam with their big batch of greens each week. And we started for an 8-week cycle last summer, and then we were able to kind of extend it once we kind of got our feet on the ground. Oh,
sure.
Yeah, we can get a little longer. And then this year we did a 10-week, and then we extended it out to 14 weeks. So last week was our last pickup, and I was able to ask our family about halfway in to our growing season. We had a pretty cool season this year, so our production was a little less.
Okay.
And then we also have a small greenhouse, so I do a lot of starts, which I will sell through. We have a small produce business that's based out of Petersburg that hangs out in Petersburg as well as in Sitka. They go down to the Seattle vegetable market, wherever that is, and come up usually once every other week during the summer, and was able to sell some extra there as well. and starts. So, and then basil, kind of, I call that my cash crop, because people are willing to pay a lot of money for basil.
Yeah.
So it has just been an absolute fun kind of entry for us into agriculture on a real micro level.
Yeah. Well, yeah. If you just tuned in, I want to remind folks that you're listening to Ag Matters Radio, and I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and this morning we're talking about micro gardening in Sitka with my guest, Lisa Sadler Hart. So you said you, halfway through this year's summer, you were able to invite a third family in, but what does the future look like? Are you hoping to expand more, or how much capacity do you have?
Yeah, so we have, we garden, grow all in raised beds. And if folks are not familiar with trying to grow food, in the central part of Southeast Alaska, it is a real challenge because we don't have soil.
Right.
And you have to, build all of your soil. So first, usually you've got to find dirt, and then you've got to get the amendments. Sand and either compost or some other kind of organic matter. So I kind of go a third, a third, a third. And it's a lot of work. So we have about 12 to 16 beds. And last summer, Tom also built three raised beds that are at our waist height because we're also aging. We're into our late 50s. And we're going to want to be able to grow food for a long time. And we realize, you know, most of our beds, of course, most of us grow food from the ground up. And
right.
So it requires lots of on your knees and bending over. And, you know, we realize that from an aging perspective, that could be a real challenge.
Yeah.
So that's going to be something that we'll need to be thinking about. And we've got a lot of young people in our community that are really keen on learning to grow things. I've tossed around this idea of doing kind of an urban homesteading kind of internship where I might have a young person that would live with us for a month or so, and we would teach them all the gardening stuff as well as, you know, how to put up food and how to make bread from scratch and make yogurt from scratch and can and do all of that kind of stuff.
Oh, I want to come do that, Lisa.
I know. I actually think people would actually maybe want to pay to do it.
So absolutely.
Tom and I are kind of floating that idea as a possibility because I think there's a hunger and a thirst for this information.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we've spent a lot of time. We've been in this home for close to over 20 years, actually. And so it takes, you know, it takes a lot of time to learn these things. And each part in Sitka, as anywhere else, has little microclimates. So
absolutely.
We're a little cooler because we're right up at the base of Gavin Hill. And so one of the things, like, we found out is that, you know, we can grow greens like anything. So I can grow Swiss chard and kale and heirloom lettuces and all the, and really lettuces especially grow well. We grow potatoes and some root crops as well, but the greens are really what shine up here. And but I can't for the life of me do very well with brassicas, so I can't really grow cabbage and broccoli very well, and kale.
Yeah.
Well, kale I can do, but those other ones they take a lot of space actually as well.
Sure.
So, you know, trying to really figure out rotation and how, and we're big on rotating throughout our beds, and making sure that we have, our biggest pest issue are slugs. I mean, the slugs just about do us in.
Oh, really?
Oh, they're terrible. And I would love to have ducks or chickens to take care of the slugs, but we are right on a bear through, and so we have bears through our neighborhood often, although several families in our neighborhood have recently acquired chickens. So I'm kind of watching to see how that happens. Cause, or even to rent a chicken or rent a duck to come through in the spring and just munch out. Because it really is challenging. You've really got to be out there pretty much every day. And we don't put any kind of chemicals on our garden.
That was going to be my next question. Are you're not officially organic, but you use organic practices, correct?
We use absolutely organic practices. Nothing funky.
Yeah.
And, you know, our biggest thing is maybe we try Sluggo, but I'm not convinced that Sluggo with the amount of slugs that we have really works. So, and it's pretty expensive stuff. So, we use sustainable practices. And it wouldn't make really any sense for us to kind of jump through those hoops financially to become an organic certified.
Right, Right. So you're feeding your own family of two. Do you and Tom, do you even shop at the grocery store for produce, or are you growing all the produce that you need?
We during the summer, we grow most of the produce, except maybe for things like garlic and onions, you know, kind of the basic stuff. But we eat from our garden most, you know, and I was just kind of calculating this. You know, we plant mid-May because that's our frost date. And then we can start harvesting lettuce and whatnot within about a month. So, you know, I haven't bought lettuce in 4 months. Yeah. I don't buy kale or greens at all. We're big fruit people. Now, we do have a couple of fruit trees. We've got some apple trees and a cherry tree that's not really done its thing. But it would be really hard from a fruit perspective to completely feed ourselves.
Sure.
But, you know, we do pretty dang good. And it definitely offsets our food budget in a pretty significant way, given how much produce we do eat.
Yeah. What about carrots?
Carrots?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, the carrots are amazing. And normally I would hold back on my carrots, but this year I really wanted to share them with our community-supported box folks because they're so amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, the carrots in Alaska are like none other.
Yeah.
They are incredibly sweet. And, yeah, so we will be eating off our carrots. And we also grow potatoes for ourselves. So the potatoes will get us through probably until about January, February.
Yeah, I remember being at your house, I think it was in October one year, and that's the reason I asked about the carrots, because I remember your carrots.
The carrots are amazing,
yeah.
And then, you know, there's been a real boon with a lot of people trying to add fruit trees, especially because there's varieties of apples that do incredibly well here.
Yeah.
And I understand that I think through the Thicket Conservation Council, the 4-H program, that they applied to a grant and got awarded a grant to do a community orchard.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so I'm really excited. I'm not sure of any of the details on that. We have a really strong 4-H program, and people don't necessarily think of 4-H necessarily down here in Southeast, but it's really been growing through the Conservation Society, and they actually have a Jesuit volunteer that's dedicated to working with the program, and then Josh Mustaw, who works over at Cooperative Extension, works with that program as well, and it's very much focused on, you know, Alaska ways of living.
Yeah, very good. Well, there's nothing like inspiring youth, you know, to get a community more excited about local food. If you can get the kids talking about it, then, you know, that's like, it's a gateway drug, right?
Huge. And, you know, having, you know, kids like stop by our garden and, you know, offer them an opportunity to pull a carrot and have them wash them up and taste them. And it's just like, oh my gosh, this is like way good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's way good. And it's not that terribly difficult. And it connects you to nature and to the earth and what, you know, where our food comes from.
Right.
And I think so many people have really lost that sense, maybe not so much here in Alaska because we live so close to the land, but I think it's people really have lost that, and as we lose farmland and the soil compromise, etc., we're going to struggle if we don't figure out how to do this. You know, the other thing I just wanted to say is when, you know, we put our garden in, I want to say 2008, maybe. We had a smaller garden, but we did a major expansion. And after that, I would say in our tiny little neighborhood up here, we saw 5 more front yard gardens go in.
Oh, good.
And so, yeah, and they're gardening for themselves. But it's pretty dang cool to walk around our neighborhood and have a lot of people growing either in containers or they'll have some raised beds in their front yard. And it's quite gratifying because you really see that notion of being able to model for folks and to show that it's not that terribly difficult. And it's just incredibly rewarding.
Absolutely.
And it's incredibly rewarding not only to feed yourself, but when you can feed your neighbors. One of the families that that started with us last year, she was pregnant. So I, in a sense, was able to feed her and her baby.
Oh, I love it.
And grow this child from the inside out with really, you know, high quality, delicious food. And it's really awesome. And I also know that here in Sitka, Lori Adams, who had a down-to-earth UPIC farm, she has also switched to the CSA model.
Oh, really?
And I understand, if I remember from Lori, she'd be a good one to maybe get on here on the show later, is that I think she had 25 families.
Wow.
She had quite a bit larger growing area than we do.
Yeah. Well, I think that speaks to people's desire for convenience. I think it's so much more convenient for the shopper or the mom to just come get her box of, you know, already picked, washed, et cetera, veggies and not have to walk through the garden or the stand and select things. I think that Americans and people, just because of time constraints or whatever reason, we just love convenience.
Right. So I think it's as easy as you can make it. It just works really well. And I also think that model works well because you're having people pay up front.
Yes. That's
good
for... They're
investing in your garden or your growing operation. And there's something to really be said about that because they're, in a sense, then become kind of a part owner.
Yeah. There's value.
And so they want to see you succeed because then they succeed, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So one more reminder that you're listening to Ag Matters Radio. I'm Amy Pettit, and we're talking with Lisa Sadler-Hart from down in Sitka and her micro garden called Anamkara Family Garden. So, Lisa, we're two-thirds of the way through our time already, so I want to transition a little bit to some of the broader topics of Sitka food production and the food system in Sitka. As I mentioned on our social media post about having you on the show today, you and I met because we were both on the Alaska Food Policy Council Governing Board. We're both pretty passionate about local food and food systems. So tell us a little more about what's happening in Sitka with local food.
Sure. So at about the same time the Food Policy Council got up and running, so did the Sitka Local Foods Network. And I was on that board for quite a many years. I've been off now for 2 years. And the good news is that even when we leave the board, those organizations that really have strong roots continue.
Yeah.
And that's been the case with the Local Food Network. And the Local Food Network really has been really focused on helping people understand what they can grow and how to grow food here in Sitka for themselves, their families. And then they also are the ones who run the Sitka Farmers Market.
Okay.
And so the Sitka Farmers Market runs July through the middle of September, and usually there are 7 markets every other Saturday. And this last year was a pretty vibrant market. There was a new market manager that was a new Sitka Local Food Board member who moved here from New York City. Her husband's with the Coast Guard, and she had managed markets in the middle of New York City before.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so she brought just some amazing new kinds of energy and ideas. And we also saw some new kind of food-based vendors. There's a family in town that started to make homemade caramel. And, my gosh, my favorite one was they had at the last market was, I think they used the nut brown ale from the local brewery in Brussels.
Oh, my goodness.
Caramel. It was delicious. Absolutely delicious.
A few of my favorite things.
they were really able to draw in some more vendors. We had really wonderful prepared food vendors, the youth advocates of Sitka that work with high-risk youth. They started a smoothie truck.
Oh.
A smoothie truck was out there in the parking lot where the local food network farm stand was, and also a seafood, Ashmo's food truck was there as well. And what I've noticed is that when the food trucks are there, I mean, people will come to the market to buy things, but when there's prepared foods at a market, that people stay.
Absolutely.
And, of course, we had music at almost every market and whatnot. And, the smoothie truck, they were sourcing the kale that they were putting in their blueberry kale smoothie locally.
Oh, good.
And I think the carrots they were trying to source locally as they could. So it was really neat to see young people learning a skill. And they did very, very well, I think, this summer. So this was a really vibrant way, and I think it's a community gathering, as most farmers markets are.
Absolutely.
People come, yes, for the food, but they stay because of the people and the conversations.
Right? Yeah, so, I think that that's something that when we have farmers who start farmers markets, sometimes they're so focused on the produce availability and the diversity of crops at the market, et cetera. And sometimes it takes a little tweaking to really convince those farmers that the farmers market can be an event and a destination and a place to go and stay. And if you provide entertainment and you provide good seating and you provide prepared food, people will stay. And if they stay, guess what they do? They spend
more money. That's exactly what we found with the farmers markets here in Sitka. So this was the 10th season.
Oh, that's incredible.
It's amazing because there's been some pretty ups and downs.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think that sometimes people understand how complicated it is to run a farmer's market.
Right.
It's a lot of work to put a farmer's market on and to keep it vibrant. So we have these farmer's markets that happen. And, you know, we're seeing some more growers. I mean, we do have, there's a woman who went through all the permitting process, and she harvests beech asparagus. So, you know, people can buy local beech asparagus.
Oh, wow. I don't even know what that is. Going to have to Google beech asparagus after
the show. You're going to have to Google it, yeah. And there's actually, the Cooperative Exhibition actually has a canning recipe for, you know, canning up beech asparagus. It's something that grows in the intertidal zone, and it's quite delicious. My favorite probably meal is to have sauteed beech asparagus with local garlic and then a grilled piece of either salmon or halibut and a local potato.
Oh,
it's
Who's
one of my
now?
Favorite simple delicious meals.
So
we have somebody that offers that, and then we had this new woman that was doing these caramels. We had this, actually one of the families that part of my community for them. I started baking because they both have baking skills, and that I'll tell you, the baked goods they did are really well.
Yeah.
And so,
do they come and grind their wheat on your bike?
You remember that they don't grind their grain at my grain mill, but their stuff is pretty dang good.
Okay. Very good.
So there's a lot of that happening. We also saw there's a new farm out on Middle Island that's focused on growing garlic, Middle Island Gardens. Andrea would be a really good person.
Yeah.
Is that her name? Let me think. I may have that incorrect, but I think that's right.
Okay.
But they are doing an amazing job with garlic.
Yeah.
So we do have, you know, that new growing operation. They were at the farmer's market. It's a vibrant place, and it's really neat to also see that, you know, we still have a really vibrant fish to schools program. The Conservation Society is really the spearhead of that and works with local fishermen to donate fish.
So many good things happening down there in Sitka,
Lisa.
There
are some really, really good things happening.
I'm so glad that you were able to take the time to be on the show with me this morning. Our time is up already, but thanks for the good ideas for future guests, and I really appreciate you joining me this morning on Ag Matters Radio.
All right. Well, you have a great day. It's a lovely day here in Southeast. It's actually, the skies are clear.
Oh, well, soak it up because it's not here. So thanks again, Lisa.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Been listening to Ag Matters, covering positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit of the Alaska Farmland Trust. Ag Matters is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. For more information about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.